Yeah, if you look at your desires not being your own, but being God's,
yeah,
then there's also, like, maybe that's a tool that helps you to recognize what it is that I need to release.
Right.
Because you recognize I have a certain ambition, I have a certain desire, something that I want to dedicate myself to or achieve or gain, and then being able to look at that and stop and say, the desire that is I want to be careful how I say this, because I don't want to say, like, oh, because I want something, it's from God. I want to say, like, almost the opposite. I'm trying to say, wait a minute, I'm recognizing that I'm desiring something. When I consider that my desire is something that was given to me from God, then am I using it in the right way by desiring this thing?
Welcome to The Sacred Life. I'm your host, Aaron Beachy, coming to you from Higher Ground Fellowship in Kokomo, Indiana. We at The Sacred Life are dedicated to practical Christian ideas, and today we have for you another episode of Ancient Insights, and David Baylor will be sharing with us from the Theologia Germanica. Also with us today is John Baylor as well. David, give us a brief summary of what the Theologia Germanica is before we get started.
So this is, just to recap, a medieval, I guess you would say, devotional book, or meditation book, however you want to look at it, just kind of a discussion of Christianity from the perspective of a German Christian, I guess you would say. I think they think it was written sometime around 1350. So in our perspective, it's pretty old. But I guess in his perspective, he had 1300 years of Christianity behind him to build on. So, anyway, we'll just jump right in, starting at chapter 5. Certain men say that we ought to be without will, wisdom, love, desire, knowledge, and the like. Hereby is not to be understood that there is to be no knowledge in man, and that God is not to be loved by him, nor desired and longed for, nor praised and honored. For that were a great loss, and men were like the beast, and as the brutes that have no reason. But it means that man's knowledge should be so clear and perfect that he should acknowledge of a truth that in himself he neither has nor can do anything, and that none of his knowledge, wisdom, and art, his will, love, and good works, do come from himself, nor are of man, nor of any creature, but that all these are of the eternal God, from whom they all proceed. As Christ himself says, without me you can do nothing. Saint Paul says also, what have you that you have not received? As much as to say, nothing. Now if you did receive it, why do you glory as if you had not received it? Again, he says, not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think anything as of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God. Now when a man duly perceives these things in himself, he and the creature fall behind, and he does not call anything his own. And the less he takes this knowledge to himself, the more perfect does it become. So also is it with the will and the love and desire and the like. For the less we call these things our own, the more perfect and noble and godlike do they become. And the more we think them our own, the baser and less pure and perfect do they become. We'll stop there, I guess, briefly and discuss that passage before reading on.
I'm basically just going to give summary, not very much discussion, but we've seen this idea in this work already, that it doesn't work to try to own things and take them to yourselves, and that's pride. And when you try to do that, then the thing that you're trying to claim doesn't have real value anymore. He starts with this: certain men say that we ought to be without wisdom, love, desire, knowledge, and the like. And then basically he's just going to go on to say, instead of what it means to be without knowledge is that it means you don't have ownership of your knowledge. It's
right.
It's not something that you can take credit for. It's not something that came from you. It's not something that you have some sort of certain claim on or something like that.
Yes, and so like that's true of all the things that he brings out there.
Yeah, so knowledge is what he's really
yeah
trying to develop throughout that.
Well, I mean, like, he also does that. Like, he also talks about desire. He's developing that with desire. That's in this passage as well. So knowledge and desire mm-hmm. are kind of the two he's touching on the most. Probably because those are, like, the two we tend to get stuck on the most.
I guess, sorry, you had another thought.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I was just asking Aaron some questions about that last... Was it last night? No, it was two days ago, I guess. Just about the question of desire. Like, somebody had said something about being free from all desire, like not having any desire,
mm-hmm.
And just kind of working around with that is like, depending on how you interpret that statement, it's either right or wrong. It's like, and here he's saying the same thing, like saying that we're without will, wisdom, love, desire, knowledge, and the like, but then kind of saying, but not actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what we're without is our own knowledge, will, like all our own desire, our own of all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like what we see then. So like, first of all, he immediately turns back and says, obviously that doesn't mean we can't have any desire at all, because then we're just like brute beasts. Like, we don't have anything. Like, there's no, like I would say, like there's no flavor, there's no color, there's no beauty to life without desire.
Mm-hmm.
So to say we have to be without desire is on its face false. But then here he's saying it as a rhetorical statement, like I guess you could say hyperbolically, like throwing out an extreme statement to, I guess, to catch your attention.
Mm-hmm.
But like also like it's true, but in a certain way.
I think one other comment on this idea of not owning these sorts of things. I think about this a lot in terms of artistic abilities, that you can try to do something, accomplish something, create something that will be so great, and you'll have this great credit to your name, and people will admire you. Not even that admiration is necessarily the thing that you're looking for, but like just being able to say, I have accomplished something that's really great and that I'm really proud of. And there is a better approach than to just say, I want to do something that I can be proud of. There's another approach that says, I want to use the gifts that I have in a way that is good for other people. And so the focus is not, how do I do something that I'm proud of, but the focus is, how do I do something that's a genuine blessing to other people?
And yeah, so I really like the three, well, I guess he has four verses here. When I'm looking especially at the first three scripture verses that he brought out to illustrate this point. So first he says, Christ says, without me, you can do nothing. And then he says, what have you that you have not received? And then the third one is, now if you did receive it, I guess that's actually a continuation of the second one. Now if you did receive it, why do you glory as if you had not received it? So like looking at that in terms of your knowledge or your desire, let's say with desire for now. So looking at that in terms of your desire, you have a desire for something. How am I viewing that desire? Am I looking at it as if it's my desire? Or am I looking at it as if I received it from God? Because that subtle little difference there will dictate what I do and where that desire leads me.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's the same of all the others as well. If I think my love or my knowledge and my wisdom or even my will is something that's given from God, then that will completely change what I then do with it. So like then, my desire becomes something different, and the nature of it is very different because it's not serving me. I guess I would. I'll keep reading on unless you have some other comment on that.
No.
Okay. Behold, on this sort must we cast all things from us and strip ourselves of them. We must refrain from claiming anything for our own. When we do this, we shall have the best, fullest, clearest, and noblest knowledge that a man can have, and also the noblest and purest love, will, and desire. For then these will be all of God alone. It is much better that they should be God's than the creatures. Now that I ascribe anything good to myself, as if I were or had done or knew or could perform any good thing, or that it were mine, this is all of sin and folly.
For if the truth were rightly known by me, I should also know that I am not that good thing, and that it is not mine nor of me, and that I do not know it and cannot do it and the like. If this came to pass, I should of necessity cease to call anything my own.
I guess I would see that as basically him saying all of the things that we just said.
Yeah. I mean, at the very beginning there, he states that we actually do have desires.
Right. But again, like we were bringing up, he says we must refrain from claiming anything for our own.
Right.
But like that's just a really good point. It's like, okay, let's stay on the subject of desire. If I don't call the desire my own, then he says, when we do this, we shall have the best, fullest, clearest, and noblest knowledge that a man can have, and also the noblest and purest love, will, and desire. It's like when you stop holding to something as your own, like, is when it actually becomes the best.
So what would you say it means in practical terms if I can look at my desire and say, my desire is not my own?
You had to go there, John.
Okay, so let's use the example of your love or your desire for your wife. So I would look at it as when you claim it for your own, then it turns in on itself and becomes self-serving. And so then your only interest in your wife is how she can serve you. If that would be a fair characterization.
Well, I think, I mean, just to go on that idea, like, you can also have a sort of pride in, like, I'm such a good person because I'm so loving.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that love of your wife is not actually present in that.
It's the love of yourself.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Right. And I mean, I think there is something like in relationship where you must value yourself as a loving person, and when you're frustrated with something or whatever, then, you know, like, you can remind yourself, like, there's a certain type of person that I have committed myself to be. And if my wife is frustrating to me right now, I can't, you know, lash out in anger or whatever, because I have decided that I'm going to be the better man. And, okay, so that's good. That's a positive,
yeah, that's,
you
a
know,
positive
life. But, you know, if that's like your whole modus operandi, then everything is about, I've determined to be such a good person, and it's that instead of love.
But to just go a little farther with these thoughts, you realize how subtly and easily we can fall into the trap of doing something because how easily we can convince ourselves that we're not doing something in a self or for self-serving purposes. How easily we can do it without even realizing we're doing it. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's just, that is something that can be happening in very subtle ways that we don't realize.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard this statement today from a podcast I was listening to. It was Jonathan Pageau. To throw that out there so people want to find it,
yeah,
they know where to look. Something like, when we are surrendering ourselves to God, there are always these little things that we like to hold on to. So it's like the process of Christianity and salvation is this process of surrendering, like he's talking about here, of surrendering all of these things to God. But there's always these little things that we like to hold on to. Something that, you know, it's just a little thing. I can keep that. I don't need to give that up. And if the point he brought out was that it's always those little things that end up controlling you. And so, like, that fits in with what we were saying there.
You know, I'm trying to be brief because this is a little bit of a tangent, but I was having a related thought. I'm performing music shows in nursing homes right now, and today my last show of the day, I just kind of had this feeling of like, just releasing everything, and not being self-conscious in any way about, like, I mean, when you're in front of a crowd and you're putting on a good show, then you're not exactly thinking about what is everybody thinking about me right now, but it's in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And I just felt like I had like this total freedom from it. And I was thinking, you know what? It's easier to release everything than to hold back. And I was thinking this like really in physical terms, like if you're playing a sport, it's easier, it's less work to just totally go all in to the motion that you're doing rather than to be a little bit self-conscious or a little bit fearful about it. When you're singing, it's easier to just let it fly than it is to have restraint, than to hold back. If you have restraint, then you're like making your voice sore and you're wearing yourself out. But if you just let it go, you can sing for hours and hours.
Yeah.
So and so I mean, I was thinking of it in terms of like body posture and all this stuff because I will tend to, you know, shrink in little ways, you know, shrink my body and hold back. And if I have this stance, which appears to be a proud stance, but it's actually sort of the opposite because I'm not thinking about myself. Right. But if I have this sort of proud like posture, it's way easier and it's less strain on my body than you know, if I'm being a little bit cautious or a little bit self-conscious. And there's this sense like, if you let go of that one thing that you want to hold on to, everything is actually easier.
Well, yeah, and like it feels kind of strange to say this about, you're using the illustration of like performing on a stage or playing sports, but what you're just saying is basically like the central message of the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And like he says, take my yoke upon you, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. Well, let's back up. He says, come unto me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and take my yoke upon you. My yoke is easy and my burden is light.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's what he's talking about. It's like, it's actually easier if you just let go of everything.
Yeah, right.
Like, that's just way easier.
Mm-hmm.
And since, you know, I'm giving you my gospel and I'm doing these things for you and presenting myself as a sacrifice for you, it's actually possible to do that. Like, that's what I see as being like the central message of the gospel. So it's like your atonement for sin and your salvation, like your atonement for sin isn't your salvation. It's the thing that opens the door to salvation. Like your born again experience is not your salvation. It's the thing that opens the doors of salvation. Like, cause salvation is that, what we're talking about here, that process, what he's talking about here, this process of surrendering all of these things and being freed from them.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's essentially what salvation winds up being, is freedom from all of these things.
Right.
And it's just like things snap. And so like, again, Jesus says that seek ye first the kingdom of God, and then all these things will be added to you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like when you seek that, then it's just like things just start to snap into place. Because it's like you're not hunched over, your muscles aren't contracted,
mm-hmm.
and your mind isn't like turned in on itself.
Mm-hmm.
And like you're not like afraid of everything and all that.
Right.
Anyway.
We've been going close to 20 minutes here,
yeah.
So I don't know if you want to read the whole chapter.
There's just a little.
Oh, one more. Okay.
Yeah,
all right, we'll finish it up.
That's why I was checking on here. So yeah, I'll go ahead and finish up. It is better that God or his works should be known as far as it is possible to us, and loved, praised, and honored, and the like, and even that man should vainly imagine he loves or praises God, than that God should be altogether unpraised, unloved, unhonored, and unknown. For when the vain imagination and ignorance are turned into an understanding and knowledge of the truth, the claiming anything for our own will cease of itself. Then the man says, behold, I, poor fool that I was, imagined it was I, but behold, it is and was of a truth God.
So I just like to throw in here real quick before we say anything else that John hasn't read this before, even though, and John and Aaron, they haven't read this before. So they're not anticipating that in the next paragraph,
mm-hmm.
the author is going to say all the things that they just said.
Yeah.
But just like, just thinking there, especially like John using the illustration of, you know, you often do end up doing a lot of these things for the wrong reasons. But that's actually is a step in the right direction, even if you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like here he's saying that same thing. It's like, it's better for you to do all these things for vain reasons than for God to be completely unpraised and unhonored.
Mm-hmm.
It's suggestive of the idea that salvation is a lifelong process that plays itself out in our lives. That we are saved, we're being saved, and we hope to be saved.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I don't know, like I see him drawing out this idea here that, I don't know, like maybe it's just like to correct that fear that you have, like, because I think that's a natural conclusion, the one that we came to from what he had said previously, that, you know, a lot of times you are doing things for the wrong reason. And he is anticipating that thought and saying, like, okay, but don't get caught up on that, because that's better than doing nothing. Like, that's better than not honoring God at all. Like, even if you're honoring God for your own vanity, that's still making it possible for your understanding and knowledge and all of that to come to the realization of its foolishness.
This isn't a very spiritual insight, but it's interesting because both times when we moved into the next paragraph, there was this, oh yeah, that's what we just said,
right.
When we stopped to talk about it. And it's an interesting, I mean, I think that's built into the way of writing. It's an interesting way of writing that he does that, where like when you arrive somewhere, then you find that you are already there.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Well, that might be a good place to end our discussion then.
I don't know, maybe we should end on something a little more spiritual. I like this passage a lot. Like this is the kind of passage that I want to, when I read it, it's like, man, I want to share this with everybody I know.
Yeah.
It's just like, I just really like, and I guess it's timely for me as well, like just see these thoughts on your knowledge and your desire, and like what about like being emptied of them so that you can receive them in their fullness.
Right.
It's like, and I just see that as something that's just so built into the whole of Scripture, the Old and the New Testament. It's just this idea of releasing everything to God, so that you can receive it in its fullness.
Yeah, if you look at your desires not being your own, but being God's,
yeah.
then there's also like, maybe that's a tool that helps you to recognize what it is that I need to release.
Right.
Because you recognize I have a certain ambition, I have a certain desire, something that I want to dedicate myself to or achieve or gain, and then being able to look at that and stop and say, the desire that is I want to be careful how I say this, because I don't want to say like, oh, because I want something, it's from God. I want to say like almost the opposite. I'm trying to say, wait a minute, I'm recognizing that I'm desiring something. When I consider that my desire is something that was given to me from God, then am I using it in the right way by desiring this thing?
Well, so here's I think a good way to tie that together. So like, it's not saying, oh, because I want something, it must be from God. Which is that Satan, the devil, can create nothing. And so like, how does that work itself out in your person? And I'm kind of suggesting maybe if you work that out, it means like even your desires, Satan cannot create them. They cannot originate from the devil. What he can do is take them and twist them.
So, like, then I think that's basically the same thing that you're saying, or it relates to what you're saying, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
It's not your same point, but it's getting at your same point, which is that so I need to take my desires and examine them and really carefully look at them and say, see, is this being directed back to God? And am I taking this and seeing it as the gift of God? Or have I somehow taken it and twisted it? I just see that as the biblical way of dealing with your knowledge or your desire or your love or your intellect,
mm-hmm.
all these things he brings out, is that, remember, the devil has nothing of his own. And so what does that mean for me as a person? Like, the devil doesn't give me these desires. He just takes what God has created and corrupts it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And partly the way you corrupt it is by turning it to your own glory.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so then, I guess to wrap that up as a way to end that is to turn it back into something good, which is, like, that's what you do with all these things, is turn them back and let go of them and give them back to God, because they are God's to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, that's the ultimately, like, the whole point of this exercise of surrendering all these things to God isn't because God doesn't want you to have anything. It's because he wants you to have them right, in the right way.
Yeah. He wants you to have them in their fullness.
Right, because, like, the corrupted, perverted way you have them is wildly destructive.
Right.
I hope that as people listen to this, that they're thinking in the way that I think each of us are. That, I mean, when we have this discussion and when we read these passages, then I think of, like, oh, there's this area of my life where I need to be able to do this, and there's this area, and there's this area. And, I mean, sometimes I'm naming some of those things specifically, and sometimes I'm not, but in my mind, this release, it touches on so many very specific areas of my life. And I go through these discussions just thinking about all the ways that I need to be a different person than what I am. And again, what I'm saying is I hope that's the experience for the listeners as well.
Yeah, like, pretty much what I'm doing when I'm saying these things and when I'm reading these things is, like, I'm focusing in on, like, the single biggest and most important thing in my life and reflecting on that. Like, how does this apply to that thing?
Right. I think that's an appropriate place to end our discussion today. Please leave your comments and questions down below. Like the video, subscribe to the channel, share with your friends as well. We appreciate your feedback, and we thank you again for joining us today. We wish you peace in Christ.